Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the greatest show the earth has ever seen, the Savage Nation. This is the pre-Thanksgiving show for all of you inveterate Savage listeners. We're opening with a little Thanksgiving music called Para Vivir. Para Vivir, this song is dedicated to Newt Gingrich and his new friends. Welcome to the program. You know, last night I watched the last few minutes of the debate. Normally I don't watch it, but I did, and I was amazed that there they were again, the schmucks standing in front of Lamb Blitz, letting him lead them around by their nose. I could not believe it. I just couldn't believe they were doing it again. What did they expect to happen? The reason that CNN wanted to run the debate again is so they could say that Gingrich is winning because he's more moderate, and they run a false poll today showing that Gingrich is now surging. And what they're trying to do is move the Republican Party away from any conservative principles whatsoever and move them towards the left. This is how insidious the government media complex is, at least in one man's opinion. Then I had a dream. I had a dream that I was in New York City at WOR Studios, and I was broadcasting live. I swear to you, I did like time travel. I was sitting in the studios in New York City, at WOR. It was nighttime because, of course, the show goes on there at 6 o'clock and it's dark. And I just felt the entire vibe of Manhattan. And I opened with Para Vivir, so I thought I would do that for you today on The Savage Nation. When I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning with a start, not like Santa, but like by myself, 4:15 in the morning, sat up like, bang, what the heck is this? So I emailed a friend of mine who's going to be traveling with us to... well, somewhere on the weekend. And strangely enough, he answered me at 4:15 in the morning. He said, I can't sleep. I said, I can't sleep. We didn't know why. I mean, we were up. We just couldn't understand it. So I worked for 2 hours, and I looked back in my inbox and my emails from last week, and I had promised a local blogger, Rich Lieberman, that I'd answer his lengthy questions. And here they are. He asked these questions, and I answered them at 4:15 in the morning. Michael Savage, what's wrong with the country? Savage said, the progressive anti-American maniacs are ruining the streets, the courts, the media, the schools, and the military. Reporter, do you like Obama? Savage says, Obama is running the most corrupt anti-American regime in this nation's history. Question, would you necessarily support the GOP candidate? Savage, the GOP candidates are committing Harry Caray by submitting to too many debates run by anti-American left-wing fanatics and moderated by shills such as Sheeple Blitzer. Question, you are castigated and loved by a lot of people. Why? Savage, that's for my massive national audience to answer. My most recent book, The Great American Novel, Abuse of Power, was published by St. Martin's Press and has been a bestseller on the New York Times fiction list for over 7 weeks. What does that tell you? Question, do you think radio in San Francisco is dead? Savage, radio in San Francisco? Question mark, dead? Question mark? Yes, since I was blacklisted by the crypto-fascist Democrat machine in the so-called progressive sewer. Yet my broadcast is now number 2 in the nation on the web. Only Limbaugh beats me. How do you explain this huge story and my not being on a station in San Francisco where I created independent political talk radio and built the local conservative station? Question, how's Teddy? Answer, as for Teddy, my 10-pound silver toy poodle, he is the greatest friend the man ever had. He enjoys each of my broadcasts and will nip any engineer who comes to my home studios to adjust computers. Question, give me the best Chinese restaurant in San Francisco, he said. Answer, as for the best Chinese restaurant in the city, sorry, the grease inhibits my suggestions. The only superior edible food is found in my own kitchen. If you want to read a political thriller without grease based on the true story of an honest journalist being smeared by the progressive fifth column and banned from entering the UK, read Abuse of Power. That's those are my questions and answers to Rich Lieberman. And Rich posted them today on his blog, which I'm sorry, I don't have the address. Questions for the Savage Nation today on a broader scale. Newt Gingrich has proposed amnesty for illegal aliens. Do you trust this candidacy is effectively over? Do you trust any of the current GOP candidates in illegal immigration? Ron Paul said at last night's debate that Israel can take care of itself. Do you agree or disagree with Ron Paul? To me, Ron Paul is the isolationist candidate, and if you agree in isolationism, he's the perfect man for you. Now, here's a tough question, and I see what's coming. Who do you think is most likely to run as a third-party candidate late in the race and split the Republican vote the same way Ross Perot did for the Democrat machine? And what do you think the motivation will be? Clearly, to split the Republican vote, steal it from the Republicans, and give it to Obama. No matter, I'm going to tell you right now, it's like in The Godfather. Remember when they're burying Don Corleone? Remember that movie? And, earlier scene. It's before Don Corleone gets the heart attack. He's in the garden with his grandson in the gray sweater played by Brando. And he's sitting there. He's telling Michael what's going to happen. And he says, remember, whoever comes to you with a peace offering, he's the one who's going to try and assassinate you. Okay, so now remember what Don Savage is going to tell you. I don't care who the guy's name is. I don't care how much money he spends. Whoever comes up with a third-party run late in the day is working with Obama hand in glove. And you can mark it down because I'm telling you right now it's to split the ticket, steal the votes from the Republicans and throw it to Obama. That's all there is to it. Whoever it is, doesn't matter who. Just remember I told it to you. Now, there's two stories I want to talk about. There's an SAT cheating scandal out in Long Island where about 14 kids were arrested because they posed as students and took their exams for them. Okay, certainly it's a cheating scandal. Certainly it's illegal. But what in the heck are prosecutors from Nassau County doing putting these kids into the criminal justice system? They're ignoring the MS-13 gang members all over Long Island. They're ignoring the gangbangers with gold chains shooting up the streets of Long Island and dealing drugs. But they're going to Great Neck and they're going to arrest these kids and put them into the criminal justice system. This says more to me about the Nassau County Police Department than it does about the students. Joshua Chefik, Adam Justin, Michael Pomerantz, George Train. Let me tell you something. What they did was a defrauding, a falsification. Yes. You think they should face up to 4 years in prison if convicted? You think their lives should be destroyed because they sat in as someone else on an SAT exam, which unto itself the SAT exams are questionable? Let's start with that. The truth of the matter is, this is an example of how bad some of the police departments are in America. And shame on the Nassau County Police Department for arresting these young men. This does not belong in the criminal justice system. Why don't they turn their attention and go out and arrest the tattooed MS-13 gang members all over Long Island? Why don't they go and arrest all of the illegal gangs running around Long Island? That would be a mark of a police department. Now, here's another example of police gone wild. The FBI arrested Amish, who cut off the beards of other Amish. Listen to what I just said to you. The same FBI that would not stop the Occupy movement, which threatened to close down Wall Street, the same FBI which had nothing to say about the Muslim who was arrested the other day in New York who wanted to set off pipe bombs, this FBI arrested several Amish, a man and his sons, who cut off the beards of other Amish, and arrested them under hate crime laws where they can go to prison for life because they cut off the beards of other Amish who were not as conservative as them. This is the country you're living in? It's total insanity. Total insanity. So there's my opinion, and it's Thanksgiving tomorrow, and what do you care? You have a comment on any of this, give me a call at 1-800-2- I forgot the number already. 1-800- I could do it in the middle. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. 1-800-449-8255. Now we'll talk about turkey for a minute. I'm not giving you a turkey recipe. I'm going to give you a non-chicken recipe. Because here's what happened. Because it's Thanksgiving, and because I'm not cooking a turkey this Thanksgiving, normally I do, I got inspired to buy a hippie chicken over the weekend. I told you I did. You know, all natural. A regular chicken's like $5, a 5-pounder. I don't know what it is today. I bought the hippie chicken. It was like $10 for the chicken, But, you know, no hormones, no this, no that, blah, blah, blah. And I was tired of the chickens. I told you that yesterday. And it became a mess. I used the Real's cookbook that a listener sent to me years ago. A professional chef sent me the Real's cookbook. Generally, the recipes are excellent. It was a disaster on the roast chicken and potatoes. It did not work. The oven was 500 degrees. I still couldn't get it to cook right. The potatoes came out limp and greasy. It was all wrong. So today, before the show, I called up my friend Patrick over at the Chalet Basque restaurant up in San Rafael, California, where I go, you know, pretty regularly. I mean, I love the place. I've known these people for 20 years. They're the best people on earth. They're like a fine family. These people are great. I love them. The father, Roger, they're all Basque, comes from a family in the mountains, of course, of Spain, the Basque country, where his family has been in the inn business for 400 years. Would you believe this? Imagine how beautiful that must be. And he says that he grew up in the inn that they've owned for several hundred years. I can't imagine, you know, being an American living, I'm a first generation American. My father's an immigrant. So, you know, the houses I own, you think they're going to be here in 300 years? A, they weren't built to last. B, no one's going to remember. That kind of thing. And it's a nation where everything's thrown away. No matter what it is, it's tossed in the garbage. So I like people who come from traditional cultures and they respect their culture. So I go there quite often. You know, they treat us well. The food is very decent. And Teddy loves it, too. He happens to like French country food. So I call Patrick. I said, Patrick, I had a disaster with the chicken. Can you tell me something? I said, because after this chicken, I said, all I could think of is this. I said, I admire more than ever a restaurant that can turn out food consistently well, that every meal comes out consistently well. I mean, I'm always amazed by it. If I go into a restaurant in North Beach, my friend Lorenzo owns, right? And I go in the kitchen, it's jammed in there, all the time jammed. And the kitchen has a sign that says, hot means hot, cold means cold. That's to the cooks, right? But you go to a place like that, there's a table of five people, everyone's ordering something different. I often wonder, how can they get five meals out at once, all different, all at the same time, and they're all hot where they're supposed to be hot and cold where they're supposed to be cold? I couldn't do it. I can't do it for myself. So to me, I've come to understand that running a restaurant is a fine art, number one. Being a chef is another, you know, part of that fine art. It's not just being the chef. You have to run the restaurant where you know how to tell the chef how to get all the meals out at the same time at a particular table. It's an orchestration that's astonishing. So then I thought about the chicken, the Basque chicken, which is always crisp. And I called Patrick and I said, if you don't want to tell me, don't tell me. I said, could you tell me your recipe? And he did. And I'll be right back not to tell you the recipe.
Savage.
People, I gave you an opening with 5 to 10 topics. But you know what? You don't have to be limited to any of them because today I'm giving it away. I'm giving it away because tomorrow is Labor Day. If you got a topic that's eating at you, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255, period, end of story. All right, tomorrow's Thanksgiving, then you go shopping like a lunatic on Friday. I understand that. I'm not, and that's, I don't know what it is, maybe because I got one foot in the old world, one foot in the new. Even though I was born here, people tell me I'm very much sort of like a European in some ways, but an older European. I don't mean one of the newer generation ones. I'm not into the heavy shopping thing. I don't go shop. I try to avoid shopping. The only thing I like to shop for is food. It's the one thing I actually enjoy shopping for is I love going into markets to buy food. Why? I'll tell you exactly why, because to me it reflects the best of America. When I see the shelves brimming with food and everything is there and everything is beautiful, I understand what it takes to grow the food, to plant the food, to grow the food, to harvest the food, to store the food, to ship the food, to market the food, to display the food. You see what I'm saying? This is the most incredible time in human history, all reflected on a Safeway grocery shelf. And when you see these animals squatting in the gutters called occupy this, occupy that, they are the antithesis of everything good about civilization. They are not the barbarians. They're beneath barbarians because barbarians could feed themselves. These bums don't even want to feed themselves. They want you to feed them. So anyway, when I go in a supermarket, I actually enjoy it. But as far as clothing and this, and sometimes I'll be honest with you, I'm a little uncomfortable with the fact that I don't spend a lot of money on clothing. I don't like fancy clothing. I mean, I don't understand it. Maybe I should. You know, you watch a show like whatever show, you see men are extremely well manicured and dressed. I admire it, but it's not. It's like a clip poodle. And I'm like Teddy. I mean, Teddy's an unclipped poodle in that regard. I mean, people say, what kind of dog is that? What kind of dog is that? I said, he's a poodle. Really? I said, yes, that's what poodles look like before they're ruined by the French. And you get a smile. So I'm like, you know, in that sense, an unclipped poodle or an unclipped some kind of animal. I don't know what. I don't know if it's a poodle. I really don't know if it's a poodle. Poodle means puddle. They're German dogs anyway. They're great swimmers. Who knows? Maybe. You know, after I got Teddy, I'm shocked to tell you this. I didn't know this. You have to just accept this on the MS. It was after I got the dog a year that I was researching Winston Churchill, something about him. I found that he had a silver poodle exactly Teddy's size, and he loved him. Would you believe this? I said, oh, it's not like I'm Winston Churchill. But I'm saying this. People who understand animals understand what these dogs are. I can't imagine life without this dog. We have another dog in the house. Oh, God, don't get me started with the Havanese, because I told you they were famous in Havana in the 1800s. Then the communists, they drove them out because they're whatever. They were the dogs of the rich. They're a beautiful little animal, but not. I can't relate to them. I can't, like, replace Teddy with another breed. The only thing you can think of is breeding him and having his puppies, but thus far, no one's good enough for him. I feel like a father who says, no one's good enough for my son. You know what I'm saying? Then there's no progeny, and you have to leave it to, like, the ASPCA. Oh, Teddy, come on. You still got it in you, don't you, to have a child? Teddy, wouldn't it be fun? You'd have babies. So there we are. Now, in the book, he's called Eddie. In Abuse of Power, the book, there's a dog exactly like him named Eddie. Yep, here we are. Another day, another Thanksgiving, and the miscreants in America hate Thanksgiving. All the miserable people of the earth, they're eating a tofu turkey with their communist Bill Ayers buddies tonight.
Savage.
Mazzini will move against you first. He'll set up a meeting with someone that you absolutely trust, guaranteeing your safety. And at that meeting, you'll be assassinated. Now listen, whoever comes to you with this Mazzini meeting, he's the traitor. Don't forget that.
I don't know, maybe I watch too many movies, but I know, to me, that's what's going to happen now with the election. Whoever comes along as the third party candidate, that's Barzini. Oh, man, that's good. Remember Barzini? He was a good character. God, that was a great movie. Who didn't love it? Oh, you're going to watch it anyway because it's every Thanksgiving they run the trilogy, right? You are bored out of your mind because you can't work. So all you do is watch three The Godfather, 1, 2, and 3. All day long, they run the same movie. And you enjoy it again. It's a shocker. You know, every scene, it's an American classic. It is, it's an American, and in many ways, I've thought about it for many years, why The Godfather has been such a hit, why Americans gravitate to it over and over again. It's pretty clear why. We know the criminal justice system is corrupt. We know that the system is rigged. We know that there's no justice in the Justice Department. So we all dream that we all knew a Godfather who was not only capable of righting the wrongs, but also judicious. If you remember, they portrayed the Godfather through Marlon Brando. Mario Puzo wrote it. He didn't want to deal in drugs, and when he told them when they had raped one of the Undertaker's daughter, he said, give me men we can trust who will go just so far and not too far. Remember that? So he established him as a judicious tribal elder. And so, therefore, we all wish we had a tribal elder in America. We almost wish there were tribes in America because we don't trust our congressmen. You're going to call up your local congressman and get some help, right? Like I did. I'm going to call up my local senator, Barbara Boxer or Dianne Feinstein. And I'm going to get help with being banned in England, or my local congressman. Oh, yeah. Sure, I'm going to get help. I may as well live in another country. I don't live in this country. Nor do they. Nor are they legislators in this country. You're telling me that any federal legislature represents the people in his or her district? They represent the lobbyists who stick money in their pockets so they can get a kickback. That's all. How do you think they get $100, $200, $300, a $1.2 billion loan to the Kennedys? $900 million to Pelosi's brother-in-law. What are you people, crazy? And now we see the FBI crack down on the Amish cutting off a beard. The cops in Suffolk, Nassau County swooped in on 14 boys who cheated on the SATs for someone else. Meanwhile, the tattooed MS-13 Aztecs are running all over the county. They're going to get hurt with them. A boy from Great Neck who cheats on the SATs isn't going to shoot a cop. But the guy with the tattoo is liable to hurt him. Who would you choose to arrest? That's all. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Boston, Massachusetts. Rich on WRKO. Welcome to the show. What's on
you
your mind?
You touched a bone there, Nerve. 23 years in land court and another 23 to get approved to aquafarm on 100 acres of clam beds. But to my point, once Obama maybe gets in again, the internet gets shut down, is there any way you could do a thumbnail of a four-year curriculum to get the baseline, because you don't learn anything until afterwards, the baseline to create other Michael Savages?
What do you mean? To put out like a... For who? I mean, for someone to do radio?
No, not for radio. Just for the baseline to create the creative, if it's going to happen, energy.
What do you mean? Like give them the information of what this man is all about, Obama?
No, like a curriculum, like a Savage U. If you had to put together a four-year draft, or 2 years, probably could be condensed, to put...
Oh, you mean a curriculum, like a college curriculum, what to read, that kind of thing?
We're cutting through the chase, because only you know how to cut through the chase.
Well, the problem is, who's going to read all of them? I mean, my loyalists buy all of my books, so they're in the Savage University already. And truthfully, I think the opus that's going to come out next April from Harper, which I basically am finishing right now, believe it or not, Trickle Down Tyranny says it all. It was truthfully, it's sent to them already. We're just going to keep updating it because, see, when you write a book like Trickle Down Tyranny to come out in April of next year, which is when it's published, going to be published, and you've got an administration that is an ongoing train wreck of corruption, graft, greed, criminality, how do you end that book? Where does it end?
Doesn't, but
when you have a Justice Department that arrests a Border Patrol agent, grants the marijuana smuggler immunity to testify against the agent, how do you end the book on Trickle Down Tyranny? See, now that leads us to last night's debate. Let me explain something to you. I got so incensed watching that weasel, Blitzy. I got so incensed that I said, you know, if I were up there, if I were one of the candidates, if he threw a question at me, you know what I would say to him? Here's what I would have said to him. Hey, why don't you just shut up for a minute? You have no right to even ask a question. You're nothing but a front man for the radical left-wing establishment. Be quiet. You're only a moderator. I'm the candidate. Now shut up, because here's the question you should be asking me. The question is, should Obama be impeached now or a year from now? The question is, which of Obama's scandals are the worst in terms of corruption? The question you should be asking Blitzer of us, now shut up, Wolfie, just shut up. The question you should be asking is this the most corrupt administration in American history, or was it Warren Harding's? Which one was it, this one or Harding's? See, now those are the questions that weren't asked last night. They were all questions arranged to make Newt Gingrich, the retread, look like he was something important in order to undermine the entire Republican lineup. Poor Kane stood there ready, willing, and able. Pepperoni or sausage and cheese? He didn't say a word. Every time they asked him a question, before he answered, they cut to a break and went on to another. All right, just a minute. There was Wolf Blitzer jumping off from right away like he had something more important to do. He was rolling, boy. He was on a roll, that Wolf Blitzer. He had nine schmucks on a string. They were like marionettes being played by the Ted Turner Network. But now you know why I am banned in Britain and banned on CNN. And now you know why the Republicans are not going to win if they keep this up. Sacramento, Vivian, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm calling to tell you that I've been watching you, listening to you since 1994, your first week on
I can't
the
believe
radio.
It. You're one of the original listeners to my first shows? That's hard to believe.
It is, and I have not missed, only when we go on vacation. I can't
Amazing.
Wait to get back. And
well, where do you go on vacation that you don't listen to me?
I go to L.A. and I can't.
Yeah, well, L.A., I'm blacked out, and I'm blacked out in San Francisco where the fascist liberals rule. Michael Savage cannot be heard.
Can't stand it when we go on vacation because then I can't hear you.
Well, people who want to listen, they listen on Wonder Radio. They listen on the web. You can pick, you know, if you have a computer, you go on and you hit your local station and you get the sound. You're listening in Sacramento, right, on KSTE?
Yes.
All right, so what you do is, let's say you're in Florida on vacation. First of all, I'm on in Florida, but you could find it very easily. Do you have abuse of power yet? I'm sending it out to you for the holidays because they'll be gone by the time you go to buy it on Friday. On Black Friday, they'll be sold out probably. I hope not. Who knows? Whatever. What a beautiful, beautiful world it is. It really is beautiful out there. You realize how beautiful the world is? I got up today at 4, watched the sunrise. Hemingway said he never missed the sunrise. Drunk every night of his adult life. I guess he woke up every morning with a hangover, but he never missed the sunrise. That was a horrible ending. The Mayo Clinic killed him. No, I studied that. I did an autopsy, a literary autopsy of several authors. And as you know, Jack London died of syphilis, you know, because he was a wild guy, and he died of syphilis. Actually, in those days, they treated you with mercury. I think he died with mercury poisoning. I wasn't sure. But he was a crazy man. The San Francisco waterfront in those days specialized in something other than crab. So Jack London's demise was a result of the wild women of the Embarcadero in those days. But Hemingway, more to the point, was a depressive, very, very seriously depressed. So they made a huge error. They sent Ernest Hemingway, one of America's greatest writers, to the Mayo Clinic. They couldn't have done a worse thing to this man. And they gave him shock therapy. They destroyed his mind. So he came out of the Mayo Clinic, where the quacks got a hold of him and basically fried a piece of his brain. And he tried to walk into the propeller of the private plane that was going to take him back to Ketchum, Idaho, because he didn't want to live anymore because his mind wasn't working. Then eventually put a shotgun in his mouth and killed himself. Horrible way to die, man. It's not heroic to kill yourself. Just remember that. Just remember, it's not heroic to kill yourself, and it's a violation of God's laws. You don't kill yourself. Why? It's against every religion on earth. And there's a reason for it. It's a good reason. You just check out your religious teachers and you'll find out why it is against your religious beliefs to kill yourself. The way it was explained to me in my tradition is that because you are not your own property, you are God's property. Now you say, oh, yeah, I'm not God's property. I'm on television. I smoke marijuana and I lay with any woman I want. I'm not anyone's property. I'm me. I'm me. I'm me. Me, me, me. I'm the most important me in the world. Well, you'll find out how important you are in the last few days of your life or the last few minutes. You'll see as you're screaming in the hospital how important you are and how much they remember you on HBO. Oh, yeah. God sees the truth but waits. So sorry for the distraction. Is a woman still on? I went into a complete run here. I don't know where my head. It's a quarter to what already? A quarter to whatever. I can't say the time because that was the biggest adjustment I ever made in radio, was going from a local host to a national host on the year 2000. When I was a local host, the show ran a consecutive way, you know, hour one, two, three. And I ended it every time with the train sounds. Remember those train sounds, Babe? Well, if you got the train sounds, every show ended with the train. Let's see if you can pull up the train, because that'll set off a whole other memory chain in my head. The train. There it is. Yes. Yes, here come the memories. 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 Mother coming to the school on Wednesday to take me out early so we could rush down to Penn Station on the subway and go through the hustle and bustle of Penn Station to board that train, which still burned coal, if you can believe it, and take it out. Actually, it didn't burn coal in Manhattan. They had to use an electric train in, of course, Penn Station. But then when they got to New Jersey, they were able to shift cars from an electric train to a coal-powered train. Could you believe it? I can't believe this, that I actually rode on coal-powered trains. I'm telling you, it was amazing. Now, and I think about it, sounds like my daughter once asked me, she said, Dad, did you wear knickers and roll a hoop? I think when I told her this story, when she was a little girl, she said she didn't know. I mean, you tell a child you're on a train with a coal-powered. No, but I can remember the soot. And then we would ride at the relative's house somewhere in Pennsylvania, and the train, the smoke and the steam, and you didn't see the relatives, and it was such a fog, and you didn't know if they were going to be there, and you felt as a kid you were so detached from your little apartment were you ever going to be found? And where are they? Where's the... Oh, and there they were in the middle of the fog. The uncle and the aunt appear as in a mirage. And you all embrace, and the coats were cold from the winter. And the dog was barking, and his fur was cold and smelled of the air. And that was good. And here we are, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to America's favorite storyteller, Michael Savage. You know, it's true. I was speaking to my agent the other day. So they want me to do a book of new stories. And I said, you know, truthfully, who is America's number one storyteller today? I said, years ago, there was a Garrison Keillor who did Farmer's Home Companion. Oh, no, what was it? Prairie Home Companion. I said, but I don't hear much from him anymore, nor did I ever read him because I'm not interested in any story from the prairie, being an urban kid. So he said, actually, you're probably better known than Garrison Keillor was at his peak. So I said, well, it's true then. If I said I'm America's favorite storyteller, it wouldn't be a stretch. It probably is true at this stage after all these years and the sales of the books and shows. I could back that up. So anyway, look, I told you that, Churchill, you often think English bulldog when you think Winston Churchill. That's the man, by the way, who saved Britain in World War II from the Nazi Blitz. And, of course, he did it with America's military support and our materiel, obviously. But he was a great man, a tremendous visionary. He built up the British Navy when the socialists were sinking ships, saying there'll never be another war. He had to fight the liberals in his time, and he was castigated. He was cast out of the British establishment for being exactly the way I am on the radio. So when I'm rejected, when I am insulted, when I am called names by the vermin who want to kill all of us, either through their pacifism or stupidity, frankly, it doesn't touch me anymore. There was a time that it bothered me. It doesn't, because I'm in great company. I know what trouble we're in. I know the danger we're in. I know we have enemies encircling us. Look at what Obama's doing now. He's now antagonized Russia. The man has turned virtually every country on earth against us. A stable ally like Egypt, he destroyed. The Islamists are about to take over. A stable ally like Russia, which has been an ally since the fall of the wall, now they're against us, same as they aim their nuclear missiles at our missile sites. This is what a wonderful leader this guy is, the community organizer. So when I see a guy like this, I realize what trouble we're in. So I think of Winston Churchill. No, he was not a man who had bulldogs. He looked like a bulldog, but he was a poodle owner, and he had two brown miniature poodles, both called Rufus. And they were treated like members of his own family. Listen to this. The poodle ate in the dining room with the rest of the Churchill family. A cloth was laid for him on the Persian carpet beside the head of the household, and no one else ate until the butler had served Rufus's meal. One evening at Checkers, the film was Oliver Twist. Rufus, as usual, had the best seat in the house on his master's lap. At the point when Bill Sykes was about to drown his dog to put the police off his track, Churchill covered Rufus's eyes with his hand. He said, "Don't look now, dear. I'll tell you about it afterwards." It's very touching. I mean, this is a man who could, you know, march armies into oblivion. He could send boys into their death like he did at Gallipoli. Incidentally, that was one of his great disasters of World War I. You know, even though I know I loved Churchill's later deeds, he was not a great military commander in his early years, incidentally. Albany, New York. Jack, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much, Michael. When you mentioned earlier about... who owns your body if you ever are, God forbid, contemplating suicide? And those thoughts entered my mind earlier this evening, getting ready to make dinner for my kids. And long story short, I was there and I kind of forgot about it because your show came on, cheered me up, and I listened to you faithfully.
Why are you depressed? You're depressed. Wait, hold on. You're depressed because it's a holiday time? People get very depressed around holidays. You know that.
Yeah, it usually doesn't get to me. I'm about to turn 50 in 2 weeks. I don't know. It could be that. I'm not sure what it is. It never.
Yeah, well, just put it out of your mind. First of all, you have no right to commit suicide. Don't even think. It's not an option. See, like in America, everything's choice. It's your choice. It's not your choice. You have no choice in it, so don't even think about it. It's not your choice to make. Soon enough, God will come for you, okay? Leave it at that.
Okay. Thank
you. And every time you have a suicidal ideation, just push it away. It's not you. It's the devil trying to put something in your head. We live in such a sick society that the demented people who run the mind games on our heads, like you to believe that it's your choice whether to commit suicide or not. It's not your choice. It's immoral, and that's the end of it. You don't have to ponder everything like it's a choice. This is how sexuality has been distorted. This is how reality has been distorted. This is how living itself has been distorted into a choice. You have children. That's all you need to know. What would the world be like for them if you committed suicide? Do you have any idea?
Yes, I do think about that.
Well, that's all you should think about, because you would curse them. If it's, let's say it's no longer about you, which it isn't. I don't care how bad your life is. I don't care if you're broke. I don't care if you're sick. If you commit suicide, you know what that does to your children? It puts a burden on them for the rest of their lives, and then their children's children hear the story that their grandfather committed suicide, and it sticks in their head for the rest of their lives. You don't want to do that to your family lineage, Jack.
I hear you, Mike. Thank you.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm not yelling at you. I mean, we don't know each other. But, no. You know, if I stopped you from those thoughts, then I did a really good deed for the day, Jack.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You think he's kidding? I don't think he was kidding either. Well, he's not the only one on earth who thinks about it. I went through a long, long, dark phase of my life. And although I'm going through all my archives and my writings, there's one box I will not open. There is one box of writings that's tied with a red ribbon, and I will not open that box, ever. In fact, I should burn it is what I should do. It's just filled with the darkest period of my life. I don't want anyone to ever read it, and I don't even want to look at it again. But, you know, I used to compare that period of my life to, I remember walking on a country road. You know how they have the guardrails, the iron guardrails? And I remember standing on a guardrail looking down at a chasm. And I said, where are the guardrails of my mind? Because I think they're gone. I felt like I had lost the guardrails inside my own head, and I was about to fall into a chasm. You know what I mean? That was some metaphor. Well, I came to the conclusion, what you got to do is just get back on the road and keep walking and don't stare at the chasm. That's all. You stand on the edge of a road and look down at the chasm, you'll get dizzy and fall in. So stop staring at the chasm. Get back on the road and go back down to the meadow and be with your family. And go and continue the struggle. That's all there is to it. That's your job. Your job is to struggle until you drop dead. That's it. Stop trying to be happy. The day you stop trying to be happy, you might have a chance to live.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
So last century. That's so last century. We're going to eat nothing tonight. We're going to protest Thanksgiving. We're going to play some music from another country, from Indonesia. That's so not America today. So here we are in the Savage Nation. We got incredible callers. You can join the fun by calling 1-800-449-8255. Business owner says we're not hiring until Obama is gone. A West Georgia business owner stirring controversy with signs he posted on his company's trucks for all to see as his trucks roll up and down roads, highways, and interstates. And his trucks have a sign that says, new company policy, we're not hiring until Obama is gone. The employer is a former Marine. He spent 10 years, he said, in the Marine Corps protecting the rights of people. The First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and the rest of the Bill of Rights. And now people are calling him at 2 o'clock in the morning, all night long, and voicing their opinion. It's running 20-1 in favor of what he said. But the Secret Service visited him. That's the country you're living in today. A 10-year veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps. All it took was someone to call the FBI. The FBI then went to Napolitano's Department of Homeland Security. They notified the Secret Service, and the agents came to interview Mr. Luman. 10 years in the Marine Corps, protecting the rights of the American people. and the Secret Service goes and interviews him. They don't interview, for example, the occupiers that closed down the port of Oakland, California, and threatened to close down Wall Street. They don't interview the people who espouse anti-American rhetoric on a daily basis. Instead, they interview a Marine for 10 years. This is the country you're living in under Barack Hussein Obama. This is the perfect society. No wonder people are nostalgic for the good old days when we knew who the American president was and where he was born. Sacramento Lillian, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on the air.
Hi. There was no such thing as a judicious godfather in the Sicilian way of life. They were a bunch of extortionists, thieves, and who did they prey on? They preyed on their own family.
You're 100%. No, you're 100% right. Notice I said it was the way Mario Puzo wrote The Godfather, where he made Don Corleone a judicious godfather. Remember that?
Yes, yes, yes.
And so that's what I was getting at, was it was a fiction that Puzo wrote, and he did a fine job, but he was an artist. He invented a character. You know, they always invent. I mean, that's what fiction is. It's not real. Nevertheless, it had such an impact on the American mind that people dream that they knew a godfather who was judicious, who could help them, because they can't turn to the justice system. That's what I'm saying. That's one of the reasons the movie was so popular.
If they did turn to him, it was to harm somebody else. That's the only way he would do any kind of business.
Now, Lillian, it sounds to me like you're speaking from personal knowledge.
Exactly. My grandfather came from Sicily in the 1900s, and he owned a pasta-making store in what was Little Italy in New York City.
Right.
And he'd use a cleaver, you know, to, after the pasta came off the belt.
Oh, yeah.
Chop it up.
Yeah.
And he was no more than, 5'3"? This is the 1900s. They would come into his store and speak in Italian, because he couldn't speak anything else but Italian, Sicilian.
Right, right.
And they'd tell him, you owe us money. Well, my grandfather, as small as he was, had no men, just him and 9 daughters, took that cleaver and ran them out of the store and said, don't you dare come in here again.
So then, he ran after the black hand, in other words.
Oh, yeah. Oh, are you kidding? Well, he had 9 mouths to feed.
No, and they were. The guys were short. People don't realize how short men were in that era, coming from Europe. They came. No, of course, because they came from an impoverished area. The diet was deficient in many amino acids, and the men were small, but that didn't mean they were weak.
Oh, no. No, no, no. If they were not these sports-loving people, they were strong in character and in will and in family. You always talk about family.
They'd rather have their hand chopped off than lose their honor.
Oh, that too. And their children's honor.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy. You know, it's interesting you should mention it, because my mind just jumped to another. You're talking about short men who are very tough. We have waves of illegal immigrants in America today. I don't want to get into that discussion. But there are some very short men from it's not Guatemala, it's actually in that area, let's say. Again, men with Indian blood and men who come from impoverished backgrounds for 1,000 years of an impoverished diet, for example, and they're short. And very often people misunderstand how tough some of these so-called little men are. You understand what I'm saying? Lillian.
Yes, dear.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? There are guys just like your grandfather today. If you see a small man like 5'1", 5'2",
exactly,
with a wide face, and he's from Guatemala. These guys are just like your grandfather in terms of spirit and strength. You know that, don't you?
Strength of mind. And, you know, they didn't have any education, but they were some of the most intelligent men. And my grandmother, after she took over the business, because he passed away in 1910, most intelligent people in this world. They couldn't read or write. Either.
Well, they had a knowledge. They had a knowledge of survival and the world. They didn't need to read a book.
No.
They didn't need to read a book. Lillian, how old a lady are you?
I know we're former New Yorkers. Can I,
Lillian? How old are you?
79.
Oh, you're a youngster yet. You know, when I was a Lillian. No, you're a youngster. Listen, when I was a kid, I remember to this day there were a lot of television shows that looked up to the They lauded the family, the television shows. They lauded the people who were older. There was a TV show in the 50s called Life Begins at 80. Do you know that?
No, I don't remember. I was.
But what I'm saying is, look how far we've fallen. Look what they glorify now, the degenerates of Hollywood. Look what they glorify. In my day, look what they glorify. No wonder it was a great country in the 50s.
I just want to tell you one thing. I graduated Queens College.
Oh, my God. So how are you stranded in Sacramento, California? What brought you out there?
My husband worked for a company, I don't want to say, and he scored well on data entry. And they asked him, where do you want to go? We were in New York City, and where do you want to go, to California or Texas? Came home one day, says, honey, where do you want to go? I said, let's go to California. I've been dying for 40 years to go to California.
You are. It's like a slow death up there in Sacramento for you.
I know. I love it. The weather.
Come on. The people are beautiful. You got to admit, most of the people that you meet in the area around you, they're wonderful people.
Oh, are they? Oh.
Aren't they? I'm telling you, the truth is that most people, when you get out of San Francisco, are some of the most wonderful, warm people on earth. People don't understand that. They don't understand it. They think that the whole Bay Area is reflected by these freakolas, the freakazoids in the streets. They're not. They don't represent this area any more than Nancy Pelosi represents the values of the people. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, Lillian, before you go, as an old-time Sicilian lady, what do you think of Nancy Pelosi?
Horrible. She's talking about the Catholic Church. She knows some. Oh, my God. She supports abortion? That's the worst sin of them all. It's murder.
And she had the nerve to say that on issues of conscience, the Catholic people are hung up with conscience. Can you believe this? In other words, Nancy Pelosi knows more than the Pope about conscience, things of conscience.
She hasn't. She's not in touch with the world. She's not in touch with life. She's still back in the, I don't know where she is. She's on Mount Olympus or something. That's where. See, they're all up there.
Yeah, I guess when the, let me give you a saying that may apply. Lillian, you're a college-educated woman.
Yep.
Here's a saying, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Does that work for you?
Absolutely.
In other words, when you get into that power structure and you have absolute power, you are totally corrupted by it and you don't even know you're corrupted by it because all you have are yes ladies around you.
Terrible, terrible.
It is terrible. They don't know what the people think. They could care less. They could care less. Lillian, I'm going to send you a beautiful Christmas gift. You know what it is, don't you?
Abuse of power.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, I wish that we lived near each other, Lillian. I'd come over for a cookie. Take care, my friend. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You come into my house on the day my daughter's to be married and you ask me to do murder for money.
I ask you for justice.
That is not justice. Your daughter is still alive. Give this to Clemenza. And we're reliable people, people that aren't going to be carried away. I mean, we're not murderers, in spite of what this undertaker says.
So, in other words, that's the myth that was created of the criminal of that time by Mario Puzo. And it was an effective fiction to show that there were judicious criminals, because I don't know that they ever existed. But it's a fiction we all wanted to believe in, and which is why the movie continues to be popular and is played every Thanksgiving. But the myth of the judicious godfather is equal to the other myths that are common currency in America today, which I will leave to you to figure out what they may be. So you look up the word truth. What does the word truth mean? If you say the word truth to someone, you think you know what it means? What is truth? Is one man's truth the other man's lie? Truthfulness, honesty, the real state of things, the real state of things, the body of real events or facts. So if I say to you, I believe this is the most corrupt administration in history, would you say that's true, or would you say that I'm doing that as hyperbole, simply to sell a radio show? Does that agree with fact or reality? Is that correct? Is it verifiably true? Well, I'll let you figure it out. The media won't do it for you. The media is busy trying to hammer the modest Republicans into a corner that they cannot come out of. And the Republicans seem to be too glad to go along with it. Anyway, let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. There's such little time. And I feel the time slipping away like on an hourglass right now. Truthfully, it's like slip, slop, slip, slip, slip. The ormulum is a 12th century work of biblical exegesis. I can't read that word. Written by a monk named Orm, and consisting of just under 19,000 lines of early Middle English, blah, blah, blah. Ormulum. Well, we'll go into that later, because it's a very important reference to the word truth. And I was looking up the word truth, and it led me to another word, troth, and the word troth led me to ormulum. And we read that it all leads back to people trying to tell the truth. What is the truth? What is the truth? You know, you think about it. You say, oh, that politician's a phony. Well, which politician is true? What do you mean by truth? Which politician is true? Who's not creating a fantasy for you? You watch Mr. Romney last night, and I have to tell you, he does look like he's going to win a nomination. I mean, the reason they're pushing Gingrich so hard is because they know he would undermine Romney, and they're trying to move Romney away from his modest conservative positions. This is why Gingrich is such a deceitful man and so dangerous, in my opinion. I warned you just the other day in reading from the Political Zoo about Newt Gingrich that he's always been a slippery character. Intelligent, yes. Literate, yes. But always a slippery insider. And I believe that this entire debate before this creature from the CNN Lagoon, Sheep Blitzer, was completely planned in advance by the Newt people. And they made Newt look like the moderate, intelligent, progressive Republican that everyone would vote for. And of course, they published a fake poll today from CNN saying he surged ahead of everyone else. Why? They're trying to undermine Romney. And if they can't succeed in doing that, they want Romney to move off any of his modestly conservative positions. This is how insidious the left wing is in this country. They have such power. But to believe that there's not a Republican amongst them that will say what I just said is astounding to me. I wouldn't have taken it. I would not have taken it if I were up there, because I despise Wolf Blitzer. I think he's one of the oiliest characters in the media, and I would have told him, I would have put him in his place. I would have cut him short several times and said, why don't you just listen? You're only a moderator. Stop acting like God Almighty, okay? And number two, you're a left-wing moderator, so just knock it off. Why don't you ask us this question, Newt? Now, you know what would have happened. I can't imagine what would have happened if I was up there and said that. If I cut him off, shut him up, and move the argument to where I wanted it to be. But that's what the American people would love. Any man who has the nerve to do what I just said could be president. Any man or woman who has the nerve to stand up to one of these left-wing operatives, put them in their place, and state what they want to be asked and answer it the way they want to answer it, will be the next president. But that's a fantasy, because it'll never happen. Because anybody who is capable of doing that would not be on that stage. That's all there is to it. That's the reality of what I just said to you. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. John in Indiana, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, thank you for taking my call. You're absolutely right. There's no reason why these people should continue to play to the press that obviously would cut them off at the knees every turn. Whatever it is, doesn't matter.
Why are the Republicans submitting themselves to these endless debates before left-wing operatives like Wolf Blitzer, and they're going to do 10 more before April? What? And by the way, as I predicted, the more they debate, the higher Obama's poll numbers go up. By doing nothing, Obama's rising, and they're falling. It's all part of the government media complex, and I'm sick of the Republicans falling into it. That's all there is to it. Indiana, Eugene, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I think you need to do a documentary, because in this day and age, it is horrible to say less and less people are reading, less and less of our younger crowd reading. It would be great if you could come out with a truth documentary and put the fat, four-eyed dork to shame. I think you would sell way for him, of course. And
yeah, no, I agree with you. I've thought about it. It was going to be a Michael Savage documentary released in theaters. I got sidetracked by the lawsuit that's going on for 3 years with England. And God bless all of you who sent money to the Savage Legal Fund. But the fact of the matter is, I've been sidetracked for well over a year with other problems. I believe 2012 will see me in a new broad daylight.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm not a philologist. I'm a talk show host. And here we are. Here we are. Here we are. Thanks for listening to the show. It's a beautiful time in American history in many ways. I'm an optimist. At the end of the day, the truth is I'm an optimist. I believe America has seen the naked face of communism. I believe that we have seen what a communist government is like. In a light form, by the way. You're seeing communism light. And what you have to understand is that most dictatorships were not extreme in the initial phase. Most dictatorships started out on a light note. Even Hitler's dictatorship, incidentally, was not as draconian as you may think in the first few years. It was by degree. And if you think that this regime, this Bill Ayers mentality, this group of Students for a Democrat Society mentality has anything but the worst in mind for the society, you are mistaken. So as I said to you, I think that America has seen the face of what a Marxist regime is like. What does it really mean? What does it come down to? When they march with red banners? Well, some do, but no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about federal control of every aspect of your life. An overreaching federal government that usurps all state powers. Why do you think the founding fathers established a system where states retain some of their sovereignty? Why? Why do you think that they wanted states to maintain sovereignty over certain issues? Because they did not want a new Britain emerging in the United States of America. They did not want a new tyranny emerging in the United States of America. They did not want a small group of 400 people controlling 400 million people. In the future, they wanted a degree of liberty. They did not want the tyranny that has emerged, not solely under Obama, but has escalated rapidly under Obama and will escalate even more rapidly unless we have a new president in 2012. And what I see going on is quite despicable. To see the entire Republican field, and believe me, these are intelligent people, being led around by that twerp, an old word, the entire Republican field of very intelligent men and women being led around by that left-wing twerp, Wolf Blitzer, got me sick last night. How nobody would stand up and, oh, he was in his glory, bossing him around like marionettes. We'll be right back. You just stand right there. And by the way, do you agree with the governor on immigration? Are you kidding me? This is what they put up with? This is what it's come down to? A little owlish man like that, ruling them, pushing them around, moving them, molding them in order to push them to the left, astounding to me. That's why I'm not in politics. It's a trick system. You can't really get the truth out. It's a tricked up system. And it's very hard to get the truth out. Look what they did to Cain. They destroyed the man with the woman smear. You notice they don't say it anymore? Remember they brought up that despicable creature woman, that the most hated lawyer in the history of the world? Every time she appears, people go insane and berserk. They know she's the most evil woman they've ever seen on earth. And believe me, that's saying a lot. And she marches out that hag that works for the government and says, he touched me, moved my head down. Then another one comes out crying. They both work for the government. They lived in the building near the advisor to Obama. They destroyed Cain, knocked him down in the polls. They did their dirty work, and now they don't even mention him. They finished already. He's over. You notice they stop with the, we're going to sue, we're going to bring up more women, you wait and see. Never heard again, right? All invented. They lynched the poor man. And as I said to you, and I was the first one to say it, it was horrible what they did to Cain. I don't care whether he's the most intelligent man on earth. He deserved a lot better than the racism I saw inflicted upon him. It was disgusting. I don't know how any black person in this country with an IQ over 80 could not see what they did to Cain and be disgusted by the liberal establishment. I just don't understand it. I can't for the life of me understand it. You know, I don't care whether you were a Democrat before it. By what they did to Cain, I would never vote for another Democrat again, what they did to him, if I were a black person. But that's speaking from my point of view. So that's how I see things. And so they nullified him. Now he's out of the box. Why? Why were they so afraid of Cain? Because if it was ever a debate between the authentic Cain and the inauthentic Obama, Cain would have won by 20 points. He would have gotten a good percentage of the black vote, which is Obama's primary base, and that would have been the end of the election. They were terrified of him, just terrified. Now, if the Republican establishment had any brains, and I'm not sure that they do, taking a look at a guy like Karl Rove, I'm pretty sure they don't, it would be a Romney-Cain ticket, and they would win, by the way. You'd have the moderate Republican, Romney. You'd have Cain, who would be a superb vice president, but better still, a defense secretary, as we talked about here on the Savage Nation. You would take brilliant men like Ron Paul and put him in departments where he can make a tremendous impact. He's certainly not presidential material with his isolationist mentality. He could run a division of the government, a department in a magnificent way. You could make him the head of the Department of Homeland Security. You'd have a lot more freedom, believe me, than you have now under a Chaz. Now, you could take the other men. Huntsman looked very brilliant last night. He could run a department. He could run the Department of the Interior, for example, if he would ever want it. You could take a woman like Michelle Bachmann. She could run the Department of Education and put this country back on the right track and take us away from the Marxist schools of indoctrination. You can take every one of those candidates, if the Republicans had any brains. Why must be a winner-take-all? I'll never understand my country. You see, very qualified people up there, who each of whom could be running a department. And what's going to happen is if Romney gets the nomination and wins, you'll never hear from the others again. They'll be excluded from the government. Does that make sense to you? That would be a wonderful government to use those people in some departments. Why doesn't it happen? Why? Infighting, the Republican establishment is as bad as the Democrat establishment when it comes to doling out power. You know, that's why. Las Vegas, J.D., welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, a privilege. It's the second time to talk to you since I picked you up on the radio 5 years ago. I want to tell you, I got abuse of power in 3 days after you told me that you were sending it from Florida. An absolute thrilling ending. And this is another Sicilian. I think we have some similarities. I think we're the same age. I'm 67. I love your stories. I got a 57 T-Bird, a 76 Eldorado Cadillac. I love your New York stories. I used to knock around back east in New Jersey for about 15 years. I can't believe that you're not on in San Francisco, and I feel like I want to occupy San Francisco and get you on because I can't stand that Pelosi. I'm ashamed that I'm a second-generation Italian, and I'm ashamed that she's in where she's at. If I had the time, could I tell you about my immigrant grandfather?
Yeah, I know. I want to hear it. It's Thanksgiving. Tell us your family story, by all means.
He came here with $3 in his pocket around 1912. He raised 12 children after his wife, my grandmother, died giving birth to their 12th child. I lived in that home with my mother. My uncles were off in the war. My father was off in the war. And when I came home from school my first day at 5.5 years old in first grade, and I come home and nonno in Italian, and I greeted him, and my aunts and uncles greeted me, he said to me, "This is a third-grade education sheep herder, Sicilian from Italy." He said to me, "No more speaking Italiano. He's an American. Only speak English." Broken English, that's what he told his sons and daughters and me. And I lost the language, but that's how smart.
But, J.D., well, let's pause right there. That's a truth that millions of us experienced ourselves of European immigrants who understood that you could hold on to your traditions but become an American. And that's our gripe with the immigrants today. They despise America. They spit on the American flag. You go to a sporting event, as I've done in Las Vegas many times to watch the fights, and I'm shocked to see Mexicans running around with Mexican flags in my country. It gets me angry.
Me too. But did you realize this man, at his education, what he realized in 1950? How smart he was, and he said it in broken English to his kids and to me, and he was such a
well.
Great
that's
man.
But I don't want to cut you off. But JD, today they don't tell their children to learn English; they tell them to speak Spanish, the Indo-Spanish that they speak in their house. And what they're doing is condemning their children to a life of servitude because they won't learn the language of the land. There's no way for them to succeed without it.
And, Michael, when the people from the welfare department came to take the babies and said he couldn't raise them, he chased them out of his house with a shotgun. I mean, he was
what?
A dynamite. He was a coal miner, and he raised 12 kids by himself.
What do you mean? The city of New York wanted to take his children away?
The younger ones, because they were one and two. No, I grew up in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Oh, my God. You grew up with a coal miner, no less. What a tough life that is.
Coal miner. I used to take his lunch pail away from him when he came home. He was blacker than... But what a man. He gave me so much education.
Did he get black lung disease?
No, he did not. He somehow or another superseded him or whatever. He didn't qualify. He lived till he was 79 years old.
Can you imagine? Today he'd have 18 lawyers from NYU saying he was dying because he worked in a coal mine.
Michael, the stories he told me about Italy and life when he first came here, how tough it was, because I used to sleep in his bed because we had 12 people living in a small house. But anyhow...
Your story is quintessential American, Euro-American immigration. It's so important to tell it, J.D., because everyone who looks around who comes to this country thinks that everybody they see driving in a better car than them was born into money or everything was handed to them. They have no idea how hard you or I worked to get what we have in this world.
Michael, I tell everybody that story. Like I said, I'm second generation. I had 11 aunts and uncles on my grandfather's side and 5 of my mother. I can't tell you how many are businessmen like myself, how many are lawyers, Catholic priests, doctor. The first generation.
Well, now, here's a loaded question, but I'm going to ask it. You're Sicilian. You went through hard times. You have a large family. Where does your family stand politically with regard to Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama?
Well, first of all, Pelosi we can't stand. Pelosi is a crook. She's inept. Her answer about visa, that's that. She's 70 years old. She has a lot of that first generation balls in her way she talks and acts. But no, we think she's a disgrace to the Italian American. When she went to the Vatican, and my cousin, like I said, is a priest. He can't stand her. He's 64 years old. He'd be occupying her office. He lives in Ohio. And every time he comes out, we talk and talk about her, and we talk about Obama. Well, hey, where did Obama work? Did he ever have a job as a paper boy? Did he ever have any friends when he was in high school? Did he ever have any friends in college? Where are all these people? How did he get to college? What are his records? Doesn't anybody know this man from the time he
I'm going to answer part. I can't answer it all. I'm going to send you a paper copy of my book, Trickle Up Poverty, because I have an entire chapter about Obama's college years. And I was able to find out who his friends were in college, exactly how he lived off one of them, how he lived a playboy's life until he went back east, and then he started to become radical. He picked up all of the Black Panther mentality and decided to become, you know, down with that group. You understand when he put aside the other side of his mentality? The man was leading the high life, living off another, I think it was a Lebanese immigrant's, a rich boy from the Middle East. He was his protege. And then he went back east and he decided to become cool with the A-Trap Brown crowd. I mean, that's a little bit of the background. It's all in there, J.D.
But Wolfie don't interview those guys, does he? But they sent, when McCain ran for president, they sent somebody to Vietnam to interview his captor.
Unbelievable to me. Isn't it sickening? It's sickening what the American media is. You know that they're left-wing. You know how dangerous they are. You know that they hate everything that's good about this country. And the problem here is that I would say 85% of the American people despise the left wing in this country. Even if they themselves are centrist or moderate, they describe themselves, they absolutely despise where the left wing is taking us in this country.
You hear what that song that they played when Bachman went on that late night show on NBC 2 nights ago?
I never watched those shows. I mean, I read about it. They insulted it with an insulting show. But what do you expect from a General Electric subsidiary when he doesn't pay any taxes? How come GES paid no taxes and they get away with that one? How's that possible, J.D.?
$15 billion profit. I don't watch the shows. It's been on a couple of the talk radio shows. They played a song and introduced when she came on that that late, late night show on NBC.
Yeah. But I understand. Well, what do you expect from a junkie like that, a drug addict? These late night television guys, you think that they represent the truth? I mean, who watches them anyway but a late night crowd that's usually a stoner crowd? Truthfully, their audience are stoners or drunks that are up that late.
But Michael, Michael, I JD, love
you and I could talk for a long time. In fact, I have a friend named JD who I met yesterday, JD Hicks, who's somewhat of your background from New York. He runs a great detective agency here in San Francisco, and he's got the same initial, JD. We just sat on a bench yesterday in front of an Italian restaurant talking for about 20 minutes. JD, I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power and Trickle Up Poverty. I'll be right back. Thank you for calling.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Let's go to the website for a minute. Look at the bottom left story. Loyal dog in China refuses to leave owner's grave. The dog went 7 days without food. It's very touching. I mean, dogs are amazing. There's another story. Advertisers flee the TV show All American Muslim. They're running away from the show because it's such propaganda. The best story on my website are the pictures of Miss Earth 2011, and the winner for me is Miss Turkey. You got someone there from the Virgin Islands. She's a beautiful blonde girl. You got another one, beautiful brunette. But Miss Turkey wins the prize. She's stunning. Unbelievable. Yeah, Miss Earth. I didn't know there was a Miss Earth. Who runs Miss Earth, the Miss Earth contest? That is next to a story. Disney composer charged with child porn distribution. He wrote music for Sesame Street. That's astounding. Are you shocked? I didn't let my kids watch Big Bird. I knew there was a perv behind the bird. No, I'm telling you the truth. We never watched. Shut the TV off. They were never allowed to watch that corrupt PBS show, Big Bird. And both of them turned out real fine. Get back to me with your children. I love all the actors. One is a transsexual child. The other one is a junkie. The other is a drug dealer. They're all experts, though, on family values in their movies. It's astounding to me. The role models. Take a look at the children of the actors out there. Take a look at them. No, I mean, you want to talk about reality. One has a transsexual child who is calls the other transsexual child a misogynist. That took the cake for me. They produce wackadoodle children. Kirk Douglas, a drug dealer's son. Another one. I mean, you love his movies. Imagine that family from sandals to sandals in three generations. That's an old British phrase, by the way. They used to say that in Britain. From sandals to sandals in three generations. What does that mean? The grandfather came over poor or started poor. The son did better, and then the second or third generation are back to sandals. The next descendant lost it all. Nothing changes under the sun. No, but you look at the people that the media holds up as role models for us. Every role they play, they're a hero, a brilliant genius, saving the world, saving us from. And the poor children of these families are so screwed up, it's unbelievable. It's frightening. I don't blame the children. I don't take any pleasure in the children's agony, but to think that we are still, regaled with the mentality of the Hollywood mob is unbelievable to me. So now you go to the top of the website. Secret Service visits business owner who says he won't hire until Obama's gone. You hear this on the side of his truck? That got the Secret Service to his house. Gingrich proposes amnesty for illegals. The SAT cheating scandal. I open with that story. Yes, it's not right. Yes, maybe it's a crime. But for the FBI the Nassau County Police, to bust these kids and ruin their lives and turn them into the criminal justice system, wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Where are the Nassau County Police with regard to the Aztecs running around Nassau County selling drugs and using AK-47s? How come they're not arresting them? But they're arresting boys from Great Neck who sat in on an SAT exam. That shows you real faith in the Nassau County Police Department. Talking about police misbehavior, armed illegal stalk Border Patrol. They were hunting for agents when Agent Brian Terry was killed. And our Attorney General has not been indicted for this yet with the Fast and Furious crisis. It's unbelievable to me. Did anyone ask any of the Republican candidates last night how they would handle the Fast and Furious gun running to Mexico case? You expect that from the Weasel Blitzer? You expect Weasel Blitzer to ask that question? And if I were on the stage, I would have turned it around and said, why don't you ask us about Fast and Furious and why the Attorney General hasn't been indicted?
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
About a week ago, a reporter sent me a bunch of questions about Michael Savage, and I finally answered them today at 5 in the morning. Here they are. He asked me, what's wrong with the country, Savage? The progressive anti-American maniacs are ruining the streets, the courts, the media, the schools, and the military. Do you like Obama, Savage? Obama is running the most corrupt anti-American regime in this nation's history. Will you necessarily support the GOP candidate? The GOP candidates are committing hara-kiri by submitting to too many debates run by anti-American left-wing fanatics and moderated by shills such as Sheep Blitzer. You are castigated and loved by a lot of people. Why? That's from my massive national audience to answer. My most recent book, the great American novel called Abuse of Power, was published by St. Martin's Press and has been a bestseller on the New York Times fiction list for over 7 weeks. What does this tell you? Question, do you think radio in San Francisco is dead? Answer, Michael says, radio in San Francisco dead? Yes, since I was blacklisted by the crypto-fascist Democrat machine in this so-called progressive sewer. My broadcast is now number two in the nation on the web. Only Limbaugh beats me. How do you explain this huge story of my not being on a station in the city where I created independent political talk radio and built the local station? Question, how's Teddy? As for Teddy, my 10-pound silver toy poodle, he is the greatest friend the man ever had. He enjoys each of my broadcasts and will nip any engineer who comes to my home studios to adjust computers. Question, give me the best Chinese restaurant in San Francisco. As for the best Chinese restaurant in the city, sorry, says Savage. The grease inhibits my suggestions. The only superior edible food is found in my own kitchen. If you want to read a political thriller based on the true story of an honest journalist being smeared by the progressive fifth column and banned for entering the UK without grease, read Abuse of Power. Questions today for the Savage Nation. Newt Gingrich shamed himself by proposing amnesty for illegal aliens. As you well know, I know who he is. Do you trust this man? Ron Paul last night said that Israel can take care of itself. Do you agree or disagree with him? To me, Ron Paul is the Ralph Nader of our time. Who do you think is most likely to run as a fake third-party candidate in 2012 and split the Republican vote, a sort of Ross Perot? I can tell you two people who I think are going to do it, and you know what their motivation is, and you know what their motivation is, don't you, to destroy the Republican chances. Remember this, anybody who comes in at the last minute and runs as a third-party candidate is running for Obama, no matter who he says he is. And I have a suspicion I know who it's going to be. The far-left American Bar Association has declared that many of Obama's judicial nominees are not at all qualified. Most of them are women and minorities. Can you believe this? Now, if even the far left of the Democrat Party realizes that the Marxist Obama has gone too far, do you believe that Obama's base has finally turned against him? If you're a liberal yourself, do you believe Obama has taken affirmative action too far by appointing unqualified left-wing women and minorities? And now to the little website that could, michaelsavage.com. Gingrich proposes amnesty for illegal aliens. Savage proposes that you buy the last few copies of Abuse of Power while you can. The first printing is almost gone. Abuse of Power, buy it now. Occupy hecklers drown out Obama's speech. Armed illegals were hunting for Border Patrol agents when they killed Brian Terry. Thank you, Justice Department.
With the federal election just under a year away, the committee is right to look into possible voter suppression taking place. And I say possible. We know that voter suppression has been taking place, is being taken place, and is planned.
There is a concerted effort across this country to limit, to suppress, and to undo our right to vote. It is deliberate and it is by design. The franchise is under attack today in this country. A certain predetermined segment of Americans are being targeted. Young people, the elderly, our disabled, and our minorities will all feel the repercussions of this concerted effort. These are the tactics that have been used for years to compromise the franchise. What we called a poll tax 50 years ago is now having to buy a voter ID card today.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Russia might target U.S. missile sites. Thank you, Obama. Occupy protests cost the nation's cities at least $13 million. Thank you, Obama. SAT cheating scandal widens. Nothing to do with Obama. ClimateGate, more emails leaked showing it's a complete fraud. Thank you, Obama. Weapons cache found during Zuccotti Park cleanup. Thank you, Obama. Bloomberg, the faker, fuels presidential talk with an attack on Obama. Faker, 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 pants are on fire. Democrats demanded a $1 trillion tax hike. Thank you, Obama. The GAO says illegals caused nearly half of border fires. Thank you, Obama. Former Obama fundraiser Resco gets 10-year sentence. Thank you, Obama. Obama blames Republicans for super committee failure. Thank you, Obama. Occupy Oakland, terrorist weather underground is back with Bill Ayers. Thank you, Obama. Law professor quits after colleagues call care packages for troops shameful. Thank you, Obama. So what else is on michaelsavage.com? Well, let's keep going. Chicken jerky treats linked to mystery illnesses, deaths in dogs. They're from China. Thank you, Obama. Disney composer charged with child porn distribution. I guess we can't blame Obama for that. Miss Earth 2011 candidates. You got to take a look at them. Thank God Obama didn't have his hand into this. Chicago Tribune doubling, tripling subscription rates. Thank you, Obama. Advertisers flee the All-American Muslim propaganda show on television. Thank you, Obama. Teacher took kids to her home for naughty photo shoot. The parents say she dressed them in lingerie. Thank you. No, not Obama. Loyal dog in China refuses to leave owner's grave. The dog went 7 days without food. Nothing to do with Obama. Chaz Napolitano ignores subpoena for illegal immigrant data. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Get to that site right now. Well, finally, here's a final note. There's just so much we're talking about on the show today. We're going to be cooking the birds tomorrow. And a Russian anchorwoman flipped Obama the bird with her middle finger. That's right. Even the Russians can't take the man anymore. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Now, you know, the Bay Area, I live here in the San Francisco area. I love the place. I love the place. And the people are crazy, as you well know. They attract crazy people who think that their craziness is a mark of distinction. The roads are broken. The bureaucrats are out of control. Now, Oakland, California is going to host the nation's first marijuana street fair. And they're going to get a chance to smoke in the street. And listen to what people are saying. Patients need to take their medicine when they need to, said Kim Q, a Berkeley resident who is chief executive of the International Cannabis and Hemp Expo. She says, being a patient myself, That's something that's mandatory, wink, wink. Now, I told you that once you start to medicalize a weakness such as alcoholism or addiction to marijuana, you're going to get losers like this who say, well, I'm sick. I need medical marijuana. And I need a prescription from a quack doctor so I can go around blowing dope in everyone's face and show how cool I am. The fact of the matter is, I, for one, am sick and tired of breathing in marijuana in the streets. I hate it. You know, if a person has a drink, I don't smell alcoholic fumes wafting down the street. But I don't have to tell you how many times I've walked down the streets of San Francisco or Marin County or Oakland and almost threw up from another stinking, filthy pothead blowing dope in the street, and I'm offended by it, and I don't want it. And let me tell you something else. I'm considering getting a group of people together with a class action lawsuit against a city for damaging the health of people through marijuana smoke. How do you like that? You can get a contact high from marijuana smoke. What if you don't want to smoke marijuana? What if you don't want to inhale marijuana? And yet you're forced to because these dummies in the city have said, oh, yeah, it's medical marijuana, and you let these jerks run around smoking in the street, and you have to inhale it. I've smelled it in restaurants, and it makes me sick. Why not sue the restaurant? Why not sue the city? Sue the bus company. Let them understand that it runs two ways, and these left-wing fools who are fooling nobody with their medical marijuana lie are going to find out one day that they're going to be hitting the pocketbook the same way they got where they are today. And let me tell you something else. This all started in 2006 when George Soros funded the Medical Marijuana Initiative in California and the Medical Marijuana Initiative in Arizona, and I argued with one of his stooges. There is no such thing as medical marijuana. It is the biggest lie of our age. Because the fact of the matter is, if cannabinol has any medical effect whatsoever, then you can take it in a pill form. And I'll tell you something else. If you're inhaling marijuana smoke, you're poisoning your body and you're deteriorating your health. You're not improving it. It's absolute rubbish to say that inhaling anything in a hot smoke is good for you. It's a lie. I've gone down the list 100 times with you. Medical marijuana is no different than marijuana. Is that correct? Sure, just that they've come up with a new way to get it legalized, right? So now ask yourself if marijuana is good for you or bad for you. Marijuana is filled with toxins. Marijuana has some toxins in larger amounts than you will find in the equivalent amount in a tobacco cigarette. We've all heard how bad cigarettes are for you. I don't smoke. I don't like cigarettes. They killed my father. They killed my grandfather. I also must tell you that some of the toxic components that you find from burning tobacco, you find when you burn marijuana. And yet if you tell us to the average moron out there, they'll think that you're crazy. Oh, it's all natural. Marijuana is natural. Well, tobacco is natural too. Strychnine is also natural. It's a very natural poison. So just because it's natural doesn't mean that it's not toxic. You know, people don't understand that just because it's natural doesn't mean it's not toxic. I'll give you another example because I have a master's degree in pharmacology. You may not know that. It's medical botany, but we really studied pharmacology, and so I know an awful lot about it. If you look at how South American hunters hunt monkeys in trees, what they do is they dip their arrows in a neurotoxin. The neurotoxin is called curare, right? And what it does is when they hit the monkey with the arrow and it's dipped in curare, it relaxes the monkey's muscles. All the muscles no longer function. They can't grip the tree. The monkey falls down out of the tree. And, of course, they capture the poor animal and they kill it and eat it. Well, what does it have to do with anything? I'm trying to show you something. That any medicine is also a potential poison. It's only a matter of dosage. That could be even a salt. I can kill you with the salt on your table if the dosage was high enough. I could give you a stroke. So you see what they say, one man's meat is another man's poison, but the fact is it's all a matter of dosage. And it's dosage which separates a poison from a drug. And so therefore you have to understand that marijuana is a toxic poison in almost any dosage. And if there was really any medical benefit from it, and some will say, yeah, relieves this, relieves that, I have an appetite, before I didn't, and all you're wrong. You know and I know that you could take the active component from marijuana, which is Marinol, which the drug Marinol, which contains the cannabinoids which are allegedly helpful, you don't have to inhale that toxic smoke which destroys your lungs and destroys the linings of your throat. Period, end of story, don't call me. I know I'm going to get all of the druggies now calling. Every druggie in the country listening is going to start defending their addiction. Same thing all over again. Alex in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, thank you very much for this. Let me know where to sign. I'd love to sign that class action lawsuit and be there right by your side.
Yeah. Aren't you sick of inhaling this crap that all these drug addicts are using? All these marijuana drug addicts blowing it all over the streets? I hate it.
I can't stand it either. And I got to tell you, unfortunately, when I was a kid, I got duped into smoking this stuff. So I could tell you that it does no good for you at all.
No, it doesn't. It sets a person back. I've admitted on the show I smoked a lot when I was a kid. I've never said I didn't. And it set me back many a year. It makes you too introspective. It makes you think everything you say or do is very, very brilliant. It makes you suspicious of people. Yeah, I know. I know all of the pluses and the minuses about marijuana. Marijuana is, to me, one of the most dangerous of all drugs because it is the gateway drug. Never forget it. And look how Hollywood glorifies the use of marijuana. Every movie, oh, let's just have a joint like it relaxes you. There are a lot of people who become psychotic or semi-psychotic from even two puffs of the new potent marijuanas that are out there, by the way. Tyler, CJ, Tyler, Texas, CJ, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yes, sir, faith. Faith is all it is, Michael. That's all we have, and I know you're not a religious person. I know how you feel about going into a congregation, and I was an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. Once you are, once you always will be. And alcoholism is not a disease. It's sin. It's a sin against the temple of God, because we all are the temple of God if we'll just accept that. But I tell you what, brother, you hang in there. You have the best talk show in the nation. And I love you, and I know you and the other talk hosts don't get along because you're too radical for them. But I will say this.
There's competition, there's ego, they're all a clique. You know, the Limbaugh, Hannity clique, they all have Fox News to promote each other. But, you know, those days are coming to an end. The bottom line is, I really don't care what the other man does or says. All that matters is what I do and say. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may, and I appreciate your kind words. I want to tell you something. This is very interesting to me. As I say, I'm not a particularly religious man. I am a spiritual person.
Savage.
Newt Gingrich, the Go Pack Tick, last night during the debate said that he was to grant amnesty for illegal immigrants. Now, of course, this will end his slim chances at winning the GOP nomination. But no doubt, CNN knew he was going to do this, which is why they've been having him featured. And this is their way of trying to move the entire Republican field over to the left. This is how insidious this is. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to talk about this debacle is Bob Dane, the communications director with the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Bob Dane, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, great to be with you. By the way, I appreciate you keeping me company on a very grueling commute every night here in Washington. It's always a pleasure.
All right, so give us your thoughts on the stooge debate last night and what was said on the topic of immigration.
You know, these folks are all over the map on immigration policy. Here we are, yet another Republican debate, and it very clearly failed to fully address the immigration chaos. And it shows the candidates, Michael, I think for the most part, really underestimating what the public wants. They don't seem to be fully comprehending the purpose of immigration, this link between jobs and immigration. I mean, with high unemployment, you've got economic meltdowns everywhere you look. These candidates are never going to connect with voters if they don't acknowledge that anything they say on immigration policy has got to have the clear message that they're concerned about the American worker and the taxpayer as the intended beneficiary, not the illegal aliens themselves, big business, or special interest. You know, I think, Michael, we were seeing a little progress on the immigration issue in the debates. The candidates were giving us more substantive answers. They were moving from simply saying we need to secure the borders to discussing the incentives that bring so many here to begin with. I mean, think of a meaningful immigration discussion as having four stages. The first is dealing with it from a physical standpoint. As Perry says over and over, boots on the ground and the fence. Then you talk about the magnets. You talk about those all the time, jobs and benefits, birthright citizenship, the whole honeypot of benefits. But the next steps are just MIA because they're hard, they're complex, and they're politically heated, but it's got to be addressed. These candidates all of them have got to publicly state for the record that amnesty is wrong. It won't work. And they, I think the most important part, Michael, is they need to have a loftier discussion about enforcing the laws that Congress intended, about how the federal government is just sitting on every state that steps up to the plate and tries to do their own enforcement. They need to address the impact of excessive levels of legal immigration. And I think ultimately we're way overdue for a big, broad purpose discussion of how the immigration system is designed to serve our broad national interest. I mean, if you want to remodel the house, you know, let's take a look at the blueprint and the foundation first.
You think anybody can win a GOP primary by asking for amnesty for illegal immigrants? Why would Newt have done this? What does he think? He's going to win over the liberals?
Well, you know, Gingrich laid his cards on the table last night. He endorsed an amnesty, although, you know, Gingrich claims he supports a limited one, but that's pulp. It's impossible. How would the government ever have the resources to, you know, investigate the claims of 13 million illegal aliens regarding how long they've been here? What, are we going to check rent receipts for 13 million illegal aliens? It's ludicrous. I mean, doing that would impose a staggering burden on a bureaucracy that's already maxed out. Besides, amnesty, regardless of its scope, I mean, there's certain physics of it, and any candidate who touches it is guaranteed failure, because amnesty just makes the chaotic system worse. It rewards lawbreaking. It encourages more. It's fundamentally unfair to those who do play by the rules, and there's no way of getting around that.
Do you trust any of these GOP candidates to handle the immigration issue?
Well, look, we're all grown-ups here. Remember, the debates are about getting elected. That's job one. We know that. So each of the candidates is carefully calibrating their immigration positions right now to try to appease their conservative voters. Middle of the road, independents, conservatives, they're trying to satisfy the big business interests looking for cheap labor. You know, I suppose for extra credit, they're also trying to entice the much-coveted Hispanic voter, which they're going to need in these razor-thin presidential elections. So what we're hearing then at this point are very measured statements as opposed to principal positions that solve the problem. You know, it's very difficult. It's impossible. You cannot serve all of those constituencies. It's a guaranteed failure to try. I mean, you can't ride two horses with one butt. Look, maybe the first thing these candidates need to figure out before they convince me or anyone else is before they articulate an immigration position, they need to ask themselves exactly, who am I here to serve with my immigration policy? That's probably step one.
All right. In your mind, you know I'm very strong on borders, language, and culture, as I've pointed out, in trickle-up poverty. But what in your mind needs to be done to address the immigration crisis we have in America?
Well, you know, look, broadly, the debate should be, you know, how do we get our laws enforced and what's the purpose of immigration? The media in these debates ought to be asking, if you're elected, you know, would you work to enforce our immigration laws? Are you going to go to Congress and get the money? Will you work with the states as partners and not use the Department of Justice as a huge sumo wrestler to sit on every state that steps up to the plate to do their own enforcement? Are you going to stop these state lawsuits? You know, and I think most importantly right now, these debates need to focus on jobs. Please answer the question, will you agree that scarce jobs should be reserved for legal residents only? I mean, answer those questions, and we'll let you know if we think you can lead on that issue.
Look, we can all see this. These candidates are just attempting to reach out to Hispanic voters by being so utterly moderate on illegal immigration.
That's an interesting question. I mean, Republicans have had a problem with Latino voters for reasons that have less to do with the Republicans' position on immigration than with the economic status of Latinos. Remember, Michael, the fact is Latinos are generally not as well off as the rest of the population, and they tend to rely more heavily on government assistance programs. So like most rational people who don't have a lot of money in their wallet, Latinos vote their pocketbook, and they're always going to get a better deal from the Democrats. They just sort of they vote for the free stuff. If Republicans really want to appeal legitimately to Hispanics, there's a few things they should be doing. They should raise the standard of living by reducing federal spending. They increase prospects of getting a job. Getting a job is, by all polls, the top priority for all Hispanics. And you certainly want to appeal to their shared American patriotism. You do not want to appeal to Latinos by way of an amnesty, because the fact is most Latinos do come to America. They love the country, and they do it legally. Pandering to them is a surefire way to fail at the polls.
Bob Dane, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Mike, I appreciate it. Happy to keep you up to date on what's going on in immigration. God bless you, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
The scandals are overwhelming. They're awesome. They don't stop. And as an independent, hardline conservative myself, borders, language, culture is my motto, you would think that people would assume that people like us have no emotions and no feelings. The way the left presents themselves is that only they have feelings, only they feel passion, only they feel sensuality, only they can understand sex. And a lot of young people think that a conservative means no fun. A conservative means, you know, no excitement. It doesn't mean that at all. I mean, I'm a sexual libertarian by definition, because I don't care what anyone does as long as they leave children out, to be frank with you. Within reason, okay? Just keep it out of my face. Don't tell me what you're doing. I'm not that interested. I'm just as interested in your bowel movement as I am in your sexual movements, to be honest with you. I don't really want to hear about it. However, in my novel, Abuse of Power, I could not leave out a few sexual interactions between the hero and even his friend Tony, because that's part of their life. If they're macho men, wouldn't they also have a sexual life and a sensual life? Would you expect them to be department store dummies? No. So let me finish it. It's two more paragraphs. So Jack is with this woman late in the book, and they're having, they're really together, okay? And Jack, who liked to watch himself make love, actually fell from the bed onto the hot radiator. But like the Indian fakirs who can be on a bed of nails without later showing puncture marks, Jack did not scorch or burn, nothing visible remaining except a small soreness days later. Let me pause there. Have you ever read anything like that in a novel? The answer is no. It's novel. It's original. It's not derivative. Nobody that I know of has ever written a sex scene like this. Ever. Are you ready? I'll finish. Her cries became veritable screams as she moaned, and her eyes became glassy with passion. Her screaming eventually became very threatening. Jack tried to quiet her by putting his hand over her mouth while continuing to stroke with his loins and lips. "Quiet, quiet," he tried to command hoarsely. "Faisal will hear you." He reached for her T-shirt and couldn't believe himself as he pressed it over her mouth, holding it down hard against her lips by pressing it against the sheets, one hand on each side of her face. Their hips were in perfect synchrony, and she continued, her cries and screams now muffled beneath the shirt, as Jack made love to her as he had never made love before. Sarah bucked and arched and was in a world he could never see. Then it was over, and they collapsed onto the bed, sweating, chest heaving. Sarah rolled toward him and snaked a hand across his chest as she nuzzled his neck. Thank you, she murmured. You don't know how long I've been wanting to do that. She smiled, kissed his neck. It couldn't have been that long. We barely know each other. And I'll stop right there. Because my point is quite simple, which is this: women only on The Savage Nation. Women only. Did you find this scene upsetting? Did you find it abusive, offensive? Should it not have been read on radio? Did you find the sex scene from Abuse of Power grating? Did you think it was inappropriate for me to read it on the air? After all, I am not a liberal. Now, from a liberal, you'd expect a sex scene, but of course it would be written by somebody with the inability to describe lovemaking. They would have to revert to the gutter. They'd have to use F words and dirty words and be like a dirty little boy, which is what you would expect from those on the other side of the aisle with a pen in hand, so to speak. But anyway, women only. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Albany, New York. John, you're on The Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Mike, I just bought Abuse of Power, but I've been a long-time listener, so I bought five other books leading up to that because I'm fascinated on your development here, starting with Earth Medicine and Herbs and then Liberalism.
Oh, my God. You bought a book I wrote in 1972, Earth Medicine.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
You know, I was writing books about the environment before Al Gore was a glint in his father's eye, I think.
I know, and it's interesting. I wanted to know which order I should read in, but I couldn't get through the other night.
Well, I wouldn't say that earth medicine leads to abuse of power, but it's an interesting theory.
what order would you read them in?
I would read my novel first because it's more exciting, and then I would read Trickle Up Poverty because it tells you exactly who is responsible for the meltdown on Wall Street and how they're getting away with it by obfuscating in order to make certain that Obama's not called out for who he is, which is, frankly, in my opinion, a front man for the people who busted the economy in 08.
Fascinating. Okay.
All right. I'll send you another copy of Abuse of Power, though, for being a good caller. No women callers. You see that? I said women only. Did you find the scene upsetting? Not. I have 30 women callers. Out of the 8 million listeners I have 30, 35 women. You'd think one of them would have listened and called. I'm joking. Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation from Sacramento, California. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you've just sent your book to the top of the bestseller list, I'm sure, with you reading from it. That was a great scene. I would have never thought that was in your book.
Well, did you find it offensive?
Not at all. No,
I shouldn't say why, but the answer is because it's not offensive to write about lovemaking if it's done with dignity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've tried to call you so many times to get through and tell you how important you are to me. And I've been a listener for a long time. And
Are you a young lady who grew up listening to me with your parents, or are you older than that?
No. I started listening to you after 9/11 when I never turned my radio off. That's when I discovered you. And ever since I heard you then, every day I listen.
So you started listening when you were 75 years old. Now you're 85, huh?
No, I'm only 45.
I don't know how I do it. Each day is getting harder, I swear to you, Tony. The scandals from Holder and Obama are so frightening. And when I see their mouthpieces go on the cable channels, I want to start breaking things. I see that the guys like Neil Cavuto don't have the horsepower to challenge them. He sits there. I mean, he's a nice enough guy, but he's basically a stooge. And it's frightening to see them get away with their double talk and lies. I mean, they don't even say, how come the Solyndra CEO paid no taxes? How come the guys, you know, it's one after the other. It's unbelievable. How do they let him get away with it?
I don't know.
How come Fox News hasn't been screaming at the Democrat shills, saying, wait a minute, Warren Buffett says the rich should pay more taxes, yet he may owe $1 billion in back taxes. It just came out. How in the world does your boss let him get away with that? Why don't they say that to them?
I don't know, but you've got to hang in there for us. You've got to keep coming on every day.
Well, I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power in a plain brown wrapper so nobody in your apartment complex. 1-800-449. Liz in Pittsburgh, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I actually think that sex scene is kind of hot because, you know, girls, they're a tease. And so that man seems kind of like forceful. And I think that's pretty much what women want in the bedroom.
Is to fall on a radiator. Well, he falls on the radiator. Have you ever read of any scene like this in a book? I didn't copy this from anybody. It shows you how vital my imagination is. Is that Jack falls off the bed onto the hot radiator. I mean, I thought that was pretty good, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait to read it. I think it's pretty interesting how he takes the, the T-shirt and kind of muscles it. It's kind of almost, you know, it's edgy. It's definitely edgy.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you got that. It is very edgy, and it's something that you would never expect from a guy like me. Isn't that right?
Yeah, definitely not from you.
You see, now this is the stereotype I'm trying to overcome, and that is that conservatives don't understand sensuality, conservatives don't understand sexuality, conservatives don't understand passion. That's nonsense, but that's how the libs sell themselves to the children. The children by nature want to have fun. They want freedom, and they figure that the quickest road to freedom is to become a liberal. That if they become a so-called conservative and love their country, they're not going to have any pleasure or fun. And we've got to change that, Liz. It's one of the reasons I wrote a novel. You know what I'm saying?
They have been pumping sex. I'm 33. They've been pumping us full of sex since I've been, 15, 16 years old. That's all you see is sex everywhere. So why can't we be, you know, a little sexual too if we're conservative? You know, I don't have rainbows on my car. I'm not telling everybody what I do in the bedroom, but, you know, I like a good, you know, hot story to read too.
Well, it's going to be sent to you if you stay on the air. I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. You don't even have to buy it. Look, incidentally, guys, I got to tell you again, the book, my publisher emailed me yesterday, it's doing extremely well for a first novel. Actually, it's doing very well even for a 10th novel. I beat some of the big names in the thriller category with your help, because remember, it's not been on any other outlet. So thank you very much for that. But look, I'm not telling you to go buy the book because I need the money. I'm telling you to buy the book for A, it's a heck of a read, B, it is a political novel, and C, it sends a strong message to publishing and to Hollywood that, yes, we're conservatives, yes, we love America, and yes, we buy books, and yes, we go to movies. And having said that, take a look at the celebrities, so-called, the low-life celebrities who've joined the communists in the gutter. You take a phony like Alec Baldwin, one of the worst people on the planet. Here is a man who does TV ads for a bank saying that he's in favor of the Occupy Wall Street vermin. How does he get away with this? Answer, because they own the media. Now, I got to tell you something. I am boycotted by certain advertisers because they say I'm too extreme. What is extreme about me? I love America? Well, then I'm an extremist. What is extreme about me? I want illegal aliens stopped from swarming over the border? Well, then I'm an extremist. What, I believe in English only as the language for America, not ballots in 10 languages? Then I'm an extremist. I mean, what are you talking about? And yet you have rap people, drug addicts, degenerates, advertising banks, and they're considered kosher by the people who run the ad business? No, something's wrong with that picture. I have been subjected to this double standard for too long to not tell you about it. And I just told you about it, and I'm sick of it.
Savage.